This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As part of the Veterans Coming Home Project, funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CET is holding a town hall meeting August 16th to address some of the many challenges faced by U.S. service members as they transition to civilian life. We continue our discussion about those challenges and the resources available to veterans and their families with the director of the Trauma Recovery Center at the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, Dr. Kathleen Shard, clinical psychologist and program coordinator for the Cincinnati VAMC Veterans Integration to Academic Leadership Program, Dr. Jessica Theed, and Public Media Connect executive producer Mark Lammers. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mark, Kate, and Jessica, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Kate and Jessica, from your perspectives, what are some of the challenges that service members face as they make this transition back into civilian life? And we're talking, I think, more the emotional and the psychological things that they have to encounter.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that I have seen again and again is just the transition from having such a connected community in the military to coming to an environment where folks often feel very alone and don't have the same camaraderie that they once had. So it's a real challenge to find other folks, and our veterans don't tend to step up and say, I need that support. So that's a really tricky area for them, is to find people that can relate to their experiences.
Absolutely. And I think the additional problem that gets added into that is that they leave, and they leave often a family behind that has to deal with the plumbing issues and putting the roof on the house and taking care of the kids. And when that family has this, you know, service member come back, they think they can take over and watch the kids for a little while, or maybe they could fix something. But they forget that this service member who left at maybe 110% is often coming back at about 50 or 70%. They're stressed, they're tired, they don't have the resources. And oh, by the way, they got to find a new job potentially, start school potentially, and get reintegrated with this life. And so, you know, the wife or loved one is expecting, you know, 150% about a returning veteran who may be at 50%. So we've got a big gap there in between of what's expected and what's possible. And that creates even more stress
on
the whole family.
If you're a returning parent, too, then it's a hard adjustment for the kids.
Absolutely.
Because they've gotten used to one of the other parents being the one who disciplines and makes decisions. And now they have this other parent coming back into this picture, telling them what to do and how to act.
That's right. And one of the biggest things we're finding is that the children of a combat vet have higher rates of attention deficit disorder, conduct disorder, delinquency, and just general poor conduct and poor performance in schools. So just having that person with, you know, stress and combat stress in the home is very difficult for just not just the veteran, but also potentially a wife or husband and the children.
Kate, can I ask, you mentioned combat vet in that particular instance. Is there a notion of people who have a different MOS that you see lower rates? So you're talking about when you say combat. Can you clarify a little bit?
And Mark, clarify MOS. What's that?
What their job is in the military.
Their job description. Okay.
Absolutely. So definitely, thanks for that, Mark. One of the things that we have to look at is, did they actually experience combat? But also, people who are in morgue duty might have PTSD. People who have been raped in the military might have PTSD. So we're talking about anyone who served that has PTSD. The outcomes for the children are going to be potentially much worse. Combat, a little higher, though, because there's that sensitivity to a lot of noise and to a lot of quick, sudden movements that cause them to be a little bit more nervous around the loudness that children can bring with them often.
I would agree with that entirely. And I think Kate mentioned a couple of important things in terms of environmental response. So one of the things that I've seen our student veteran population deal with a lot is entering a campus environment where there are a lot of lights and noises and expectations for movement among a new crowd. And so integrating into that, and many of them feel compelled to get into school right away. They don't feel like they should take that break because they are mission oriented. So they don't always give themselves time to acclimate before diving into that. And that can be a pretty big stressor.
Well, that's interesting because in civilian life, you're interested in, you're usually in a 9-to-5 role.
That's
or
right.
If you're a student in a school, you go to class at certain hours.
That's
and these are people who are very mission oriented.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden they're being thrust into this role of, oh, you can leave before the mission's done. Just
that's
come back
right.
the next day and pick it up. That has to be a tough thing to get used to.
It absolutely is. And I think one of the things that I have heard again and again over the last 5 years is just really adjusting to that idea of having a lot of choices and flexibility in their process. So really accustomed to being told, this is how you're going to do things, and this is the end goal, and having a great deal of opportunity to make different decisions and not have that clear end point can add an added layer of stress that they don't predict going in.
Absolutely. And I think one important piece that Jessica and I have talked a lot about is there sometimes is pressure then from families to say, take time to figure out what you want. Time, though, often becomes sitting on a couch playing video games. And one of the things that we know is when you've been mission-oriented and you've been busy and maybe you've got that sense of, you know, high-risk life, hanging out on a couch isn't going to do it for you anymore. And so we start seeing the depression kick in and sometimes the substance use. So it's balancing out giving yourself time to figure out what you want, but don't lose having meaning in your life, making sure connecting with your friends, maybe volunteering, maybe getting a small job that isn't going to become your career, is something that can still get you out, get you around people, and give you a sense of worth and meaning.
Absolutely. So just I can piggyback off of that, I think one of the things that we have encouraged with the Vital program is for folks to connect with that community campus so that they have the opportunity to see what it might be like to ease into academia as opposed to jumping into 15, 18 credit hours and talk with other folks who've been there, done that, and that it is doable when you have that support, but you don't have to dive in full-time right away.
Well, Jessica, tell us exactly what is Vital.
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's the Vital Initiative, Veterans Integration to Academic Leadership, is a multi-institutional collaboration between the Veterans Health Administration and several schools in our tri-state area. So we have 8 academic partners going into Kentucky and Indiana and Ohio. And it's a national program as well, so we're able to collaborate with folks across the nation who are doing the same thing to learn sort of best practices and to share educational ideas and outreach. And we've really worked with from the top down. So we've worked with administration to help change policies and procedures on campuses to recognize some of the unique things that our folks deal with.
How important is higher education to helping veterans get back into the swing of things and get back into the normal civilian life?
Yeah. So for those that I have worked with, it's been incredibly important. It's helped them redefine a goal or to use the word mission again. Many folks have said, I now have something that I am clearly aiming for, and I feel like I have a purpose. So it's been, I think, quite impactful for a number of our veterans.
Now, how many service members have passed through the program?
So That's a good question in total. Right now, we have about 3,200 veterans who are enrolled for this fall quarter. And every year, there's a range between 200 to 500 that we actually touch via direct service, so psychotherapy or case management services, and then refer on to VA services, to community services. So it's been pretty successful in really touching folks and helping them see the resources that they have available.
We're talking about reconnecting with family. So what advice do you have for family members? How can they help the service member make that transition?
Well, one of the things they can do is listen. You know, I think a lot of times we want to solve the problems for other people and we want to do what we think we want. So whereas I might like someone to take me out to dinner and maybe take me to a movie when I'm stressed, somebody else may want to go hiking. They may want to go out in the garden. You just don't know what people need when dealing with stress. So the first thing is to ask. What would be the most helpful thing I can do with you, for you, around you? And sometimes it's going to be getting them out. Sometimes it's going to be leaving them alone. And a lot of our guys don't need that 100-person large welcome home party that's just going to scare the dickens out of them with a lot of loud noises, right?
Yeah, they're private people. They just want to come home. Yeah.
And they don't want the fireworks. And I, how many of my guys have told me that their welcome home party they spent out in the back on the back porch drinking a beer with one other guy?
That's right.
Right?
Yes,
so I think part of it is really knowing the person that you're working with and asking them what they need. And also being aware that you need to look for the signs of post-traumatic stress disorder and begin looking for that change in mood. Are they isolating? Are they not doing all of the hobbies that they used to do before? Do they have any people they're connecting with? Are they even leaving the house? And then, of course, we definitely want to look for an increase in drinking or other substance use. And if the individual is concerned that their service member may have post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, substance use, please feel free to call the VA, call the vet center. Let us know that you have some questions, and we're more than happy to talk with you about how we can help you reach the veteran and get them in to see us.
Now, Kate, how big a problem is substance abuse for returning service members?
Well, unfortunately, it goes with PTSD quite highly. So we're looking at rates for our veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder as high as 40 to 50% who engage in substance use to manage their PTSD. So the numbers can get quite high just for that population alone. And it's quite understandable if you can't sleep at night, if you can't handle hearing the triggers throughout the day, having the nightmares during the day even, then one of the best ways to manage it is to use substances to be able to continue to function.
Mm-hmm. You talked a lot about, when we've talked about through this project, sleep. A major symptom, a physical symptom that's often pointed to as being a physical injury, something that causes physical discomfort and stressful situation. But then that's connected so heavily with PTSD and with psychological disorders. Where is the line, and why is the line being drawn between PTSD as an invisible, non-physical issue and this physicality of losing a limb or that kind of thing?
Well, I think for many of us, we hope the line becomes looser, right, and is not such a strong line in the sand because, you know, we know for especially Iraq and Afghanistan, the number one mental health disorder is PTSD coming out of those two environments, and the number one physical injury is traumatic brain injury. And so I think we really want to kind of get across the message that PTSD is just as serious of an issue as a physical issue that you may have, like loss of a limb or even just, you know, having a bum knee that you're needing to go to PT for. You have to go to ongoing care for that knee because of the damage that incurred. Well, you can also come in for some care for your PTSD on a weekly basis, and we can help get there. But I think one of the messages I'd love to get across today is the idea that PTSD is something that we do have treatments for. And it's not just one treatment. And it's not just a group treatment. And it's not just an individual treatment. And it's a treatment that can involve your family. And we really want to, you know, let folks know that there are about 8 different treatment options, and all of them are about 8 to 15 weeks long. And if they're willing to do the work, we can make people better.
Is that one of the tough things to do, though? You're talking about they might just want to have their space when they come back. So for the family, how tough is it for them to do this balancing act where they, yeah, I'm going to give him his space, but I'm going to keep a close eye on him just to make sure that, or her, whichever the case may be, just to make sure that they don't show any signs of stress or post-traumatic stress?
Well, one thing they can do is go to the National Center for PTSD website, and that is ncptsd.va.gov. And one of the great things about that website, it's got an entire series of videos with veterans and their family members talking about what PTSD looked like from both sides. And it can allow the family member to see, am I really seeing PTSD, or is this just, you know, taking acclimation and taking a little bit of time? But if they are worried, and they can show the video to the veteran, and the veteran can look at this and go, that's me. And, you know, to this day, we still have in the VA more Vietnam veterans coming into the VA for the first time than veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan combined, because there were so many individuals from Vietnam who did not identify themselves as having PTSD. But now we have all of this great information coming out through the news and sources like you all saying, this is what it looks like. And young kids are saying, Dad, that's you. Mom, that's you. You need to go to the VA for help.
I'm amazed that after that much time, is part of that they were a little bit concerned about the stigma that might be attached to something like that?
Absolutely. There's a lot of stigma for mental health issues. We just actually treated a World War II veteran for the first time just this past, you know, year, who had never, ever sought care for his treatment because he didn't think he deserved it. And it was just him not manning up enough.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you, too, that when we're talking about PTSD, Daryl brought up the point in the conversation before this one about how a lot of educators, a lot of campus faculty will have a veteran, and they'll say, this person could be trouble because they probably have PTSD.
Yes.
There's that kind of perception that all veterans are suffering from this. So I wonder if you could address that.
Yes. I'm glad that we're taking an opportunity for that. I think when the Vital Initiative first started, there was a lot of fear around PTSD and a lot of assumptions being made that every veteran coming into the academic systems had that diagnosis. And many faculty and staff just fearful in how do I deal with this in a classroom setting and how might this present. So one of the core initiatives of Vital has been to get out and provide a great deal of education about what PTSD is, how to recognize the signs and symptoms, early intervention, and really working with administration at schools to have good processes in place to deal with when in fact someone may be having symptoms in a classroom setting. And I think, you know, we have to recognize that though folks may have a diagnosis of PTSD, our student veteran population is a really resilient, healthy group of folks. So many of them are operating on campus at their full capacity, their full potential, and symptoms may flare up. They may need some assistance with getting disability services plans in place to recognize appointments at the VA or to recognize when insomnia might impact being able to attend a class. So we're really working to educate and to help all of the support systems in schools know how to respond and get our veterans through their programs.
Mark, we have just a few minutes left, so I wanted to touch on the Veterans Coming Home Project mm-hmm. and have you tell us what that is, how that got started.
So it's interesting that Dr. Thied talked about educating the academic world. You know, some of the most highly intelligent people also need to be made aware of how to handle this. We see military and stories of soldiers told in relatively dichotomous ways, hero or victim, villain or superhero. And there's a lot more nuance. They're humans.
That's right.
And they deal with traumatic events in a very human way. And Dr. Shark could speak to that as well. But that's the whole point of the Veterans Coming Home program, is to find a way to talk about the stories of military service members in a nuanced fashion. It's not black or white.
That's right.
It's all human. And so we're putting on this town hall. It's next Tuesday, August 16th. It's at CET Studios on Central Parkway across from Music Hall, right downstairs from where we're at right now. It's from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. We're going to have an esteemed panel, including Dr. Shard and Dr. Thied, as well as a few of the others that you've heard today. We also just released our first video. We're going to be doing a handful of these and hopefully be continuing through the next coming year to do more of this video content to help share the stories and help break down those walls and dispel some of the myths surrounding veterans coming home and what they're going through. So we'd love for anybody to reach out to us at CET Connect on Twitter or Facebook with questions or comments that we can put before our panel on Tuesday. And we'll be airing this come in the fall, this broadcast. We'll also probably be airing some of our videos as well in the fall.
Do you have an air date for that yet, Mark?
Not firmed up yet. We're hoping late October, probably after the election. Let's let that one air out, eh?
One less distraction.
That's right.
Right. And if you can't attend in person, is there a way that they can follow this live online when the town hall is going on?
We'll have a group live tweeting as well as updating Facebook. So again, you can reach out to us on Facebook at CET Connect or on Twitter. If you have comments, we can turn them into questions for our panel and get more nuance. A lot of conversation points here to talk about, so we're going to make the final piece about an hour long, but we hope to have it full of real substantive debate.
And Kate, real quick, before we wrap up, the Mark's comment about nuanced, how these stories are, I'd like you to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, absolutely. I think everyone is an individual, and sometimes we do try to kind of put these in roles of superhero or villain, and I think we have to remember that these were human beings with their own story, even before they went in the military, and that's going to affect how they respond. But the goal is to get them to help, and you've got wonderful people like Dr. Thied at the universities, you've got us at the VA, and then we've also got the Stress Center at the University of Cincinnati that Joey Votto helped to fund. So we really encourage people that we're here to help you. You just have to call us.
Mark, Kate, and Jessica, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The director of the Trauma Recovery Center at the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, Dr. Kathleen Shard, clinical psychologist and program coordinator for the Cincinnati VAMC Veterans Integration to Academic Leadership Program, Dr. Jessica Thied, and Public Media Connect executive producer Mark Lammers. You can find a link to more information about CET's August 16th Veterans Coming Home Town Hall meeting at WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll review and discuss the people, stories, and events that affected the tri-state this week. We'll present an in-depth look at the developments behind the headlines with editors and reporters from WVXU and other local news organizations. And we'd like to hear and share your thoughts on this week's news and how it was reported. Join us on the next Cincinnati Edition for our weekly news review, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.